Hello, this is the Online Resilience Podcast with me, Louisa Street, and Professor Andy Phippin. We're discussing all aspects of young people's online lives and giving practical advice on how to support the young people you work with. Music is by Rue Pascoe. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Online Resilience Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about gaming and particularly how we can apply a harm reduction approach to gaming. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you'll know we're trying to give practical advice on how to apply a harm reduction approach to all sorts of issues around young people's digital behaviours. So my first question to Andy today is, do games make young people violent?
No, next question.
Okay.
Let's unpick that for a moment, because that has been a common myth. I can go back to the 70s and show articles from the 70s that talk about playing a certain video game will make you drive more in a more aggressive manner.
Right.
It's never been proven. You end up in this cycle of someone will do a meta-analysis, looking at all the literature, put it together and go, no, there's no demonstrable causation there. Then there will be two or three small-scale studies that come out, generally with some weak questions, like they'll ask young people, do you think after playing a violent video game you're more aggressive? And they go yes, and then they go, see, it's true. And then there's another meta-analysis and they go, there's no proof of causation, probably in about a five-year cycle. So it's still perpetuated to this day, but you know, we talk a lot about critical thinking. Let's take a rational view on this. If you go back to the Columbine massacre in the 90s, where two young men purchased automatic weapons and shot a group of people in the school. They did background checks and said, oh, look, they play the video game Doom.
Right.
Therefore, the video game Doom must have caused them to do that. But you apply a bit of rational thought to that and go, yeah, but 5 million people bought that game that year.
Yeah.
So if there was a clear causation where people playing that game became more violent, we would expect to see a massive increase in violence when these first person shooters come out. That's not the case. Again, it goes back to one of those other things where you know, you sometimes get, if you're delivering training or having this going, but surely that's the case.
Yeah.
Surely doesn't count for very much if you're looking at a critical position on these sorts of things. It's like, where is the evidence? Or have you heard that there is a young man, generally a young man, not necessarily though, who's exhibited violent traits at school, and then you hear they play a certain game that you disapprove of because it's an 18 cert game and they're only 12-13, therefore the game has motivated them to be violent. That's not a causation either, that's just a weak correlation.
So
as with all these things, take a breath, think about it. You know, couldn't off the top of my head tell you the figures for the number of people that play Call of Duty, the number of people that play Grand Theft Auto, but it is millions and millions of people.
Yeah.
And if there was a causation there, we would be in a whole lot of trouble as society.
Yeah, yeah, we would be seeing massive increases in violent crime, which we're not, to be really clear. I think the thing that I suppose, if I was listening to this and I was a skeptic and I was thinking, but I've seen teenage boys playing video games, getting angry and throwing their controller across the room, how is that not the video game causing violence? I know what my response to that would be. Do you want to come in on that first?
Yeah, but is that always a violent video game? Or is it the compulsive nature? Have you also seen that person screaming and shouting at the television because the opposing team has just scored a goal against their team in the football at the end of the day?
Yeah.
Are they screaming abuse at someone on the edge of a football pitch because they happen to support the wrong team in their view? You know, kind of like what is there in the content of the game that's causing it? Certainly with the young people I've spoken to about gaming in the past, and I mentioned this before on this podcast, FIFA is generally called out as one of the games that causes the most amount of anger and aggression.
Yes.
There's nothing in FIFA that encourages violence. It's just sport and competitiveness. So reflect on that. Yes, there's tons of videos and stuff about rage quitting and things.
Yeah.
But is that the game or is that a broader behaviour around competitiveness and compulsion, those sorts of things?
Absolutely. And things that maybe outside of gaming we would be encouraging in young people, which is an interesting side note. I'm going to go on a bit of a tangent here. Did you hear that recently somebody completed Tetris?
Yes, I did.
So, for anyone who isn't a massive nerd, basically somebody has got to the, do they call it like the kill screen of Tetris? Like you literally can't go any further because the game
basically
can't process.
the game can only go up to a certain score because it only has a finite number of integers on it.
Right.
So the score went beyond, you know, if it was 6 digits, it can only go up to 999,999. If it trips over to a million, it falls over. It's a bit like the year 2000 problem.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, it got to the point where it couldn't go any further, so it just
Now I was a big fan of Tetris when I was a kid, and I had a Game Boy, and I think Tetris was the only game I had on it. But there was a point with that game where things would be happening so quickly that I would panic, and I might, in my panic, throw the controller across the room, not out of frustration or anger, but just out of like, I can't keep up with this anymore. And I think, you know, games do bring that out in us. They, you know, they can be very stimulating, and that can feel a bit scary, a bit overwhelming or frustrating. But that doesn't have actually any impact on what you then are doing 20 minutes after that has happened.
Are you sure you've not been triggered by little coloured blocks on a screen?
Yeah.
It's completely rewired your brain chemistry.
The idea of packing anything into a box really stresses me out.
I think the interesting thing as well is, again, we are fond of going off on tangents, is some of the news reporting, and I can remember one clip of the news reporting where the reporter afterwards said, well, he needs to go and do something useful and go outside or something. Which was a really interesting social comment on the fact that people still view games as this sad, rubbish thing, which can be incredibly disengaging with young people with whom they think it's really good and they really enjoy it. And they want to develop coding skills because they want to work in the gaming industry. And by the way, the gaming industry is worth four times as much as the music industry and the movie industry now. And it was just that it's just like, It just stuck with me because it's, oh, what a saddo playing that the whole time.
Yeah.
Just because you're not, it's not something you do. Yeah, don't dismiss what other people are doing.
And actually, when I was thinking about what are the actual harms of gaming, there was a few things that I was thinking of. So, yes, we could say there's the potential of damaging equipment out of frustration. One that when I was doing focus groups for the updated version of the digital resilience tool, I was really surprised to hear a child saying to me, oh, yeah, my mum says I'm not allowed to play this game for too long because it will damage my eyesight. I'm not sure that's a real proven harm.
In my day, being an old sod, it was you can't watch a TV for too long because it will damage your eyesight.
You'll get square eyes.
The expression, you'll get square eyes, exactly. It's also the use of folk wisdom to control a child's behaviour rather than having a rational discussion with the child about, we'd rather you didn't play it for more than 2 hours because you need a break from it because it can be overstimulating. And that would be a far more mature conversation than, it's bad for your eyes, get off it.
Yeah. And if you work in an office, you've probably had to do an assessment of all of your, and one of the things that they'll say is make sure you look away from your screen every 20 minutes or so, so that you are kind of getting that variety of movement, and that's important. And I think those are things, that's a very sort of harm reduction approach to take with a young person. If you're worried that they're sat in front of a screen for hours at a time and they're not having breaks, talking to them about why it's important to have breaks, saying, actually, this is something I have to do when I'm at work. And, you know, I'm told I have to get up and walk around the office once every couple of hours. Otherwise, I could get, I don't know, carpal tunnel or whatever it might be. I think that's it's taking a, obviously you're going to vary how you express that depending on the age of child that you're talking to, but I think that comes from quite a harm reduction and respectful approach to,
certainly if you are adopting it from a position of providing that young person with knowledge and understanding, definitely, which again, it's rather than going you got square, it's perfectly reasonable to go, you know, if you sat in the same position for a long time, you could end up with pressure sores or something like that. You know, there have been extreme cases where, you know, gamers have not gone to the loo for ages because they're too busy playing the game. that's problematic, and you kind of need to go to the loo. So, you know, that sort of thing is perfectly reasonable, but saying you can't play that game because it's going to make you violent is just a nonsense.
Or I want, you know, you have to go outside because the weather here has been very, very cold this week. And if somebody said to me, you have to go outside, I'd probably say, no, thank you. Yeah. I'm happy reading my book or watching TV. The harm that I think is perhaps a more pressing concern for a lot of people when we kind of move away from the issues of violence is that young people can be talking to strangers through games. So what kind of harm reduction approach could we take to the issue
There's a number of things there. Again, there is a viewpoint that says don't play with strangers, but a huge amount of gaming is interacting in a multi-user environment. So that certainly for very young children, just play with your mates, just play within your own group, it seems perfectly reasonable. For older, you know, people in their teens and stuff, the risk isn't proportional to the sort of reduction or the removal of doing something that is part of the gaming experience. So then it's first of all talking to them about why we might be concerned about strangers. And then what you can do about it if you feel like someone's behavior is becoming problematic, whether they're just too loud and too shouty or stuff, or whether they are sort of making inappropriate approaches. And there's been a couple of stories recently about sexual assaults in VR platforms. And I think in both of these cases, Meta's response has been, we provide tools for blocking, we provide tools for reporting, we provide a tool which means that people can't actually get that close to your avatar.
Yeah.
So if you are talking to a young person, doing a class on gaming or whatever, talking about, know the tools.
Yeah.
You know, don't just sit there and go, this thing's happened to me, why hasn't someone stopped that when the tools are available? So, you know, again, that's an important part of harm reduction is, all right, these are the risks, these are how you mitigate the risks.
Yeah.
And I think with gaming platforms, all of the major gaming platforms will provide routes for reporting. They will provide means for you to mute somebody. They will provide means for you to block somebody from your environment. But finding out about them is an important part of it. And actually saying, you know, it's not like if you play with strangers, you will be playing with a paedophile. It can be other stuff, like it might just be that this person is too angry and too sweary, and it's okay to not interact with these people. You don't have to put up with it.
And that goes for people that you know as well as people you don't know. Using the in-platform tools, and not only to mute and block people that you have had bad experiences with, but to kind of choose what level of communication you want within the game. So sometimes you can say, I don't want to be talking on the microphone, and so I only want to be typing in text. And those are options that, you know, might be worth exploring with a young person. And then also kind of, I think, you know, you kind of touched on it there, that like not everybody that a child talks to in a game is going to be a paedophile in disguise. They're mostly going to be other children. And having that interaction with other children can be a really big positive for young people. So we wouldn't just say, oh, yeah, they just shouldn't have any contact with strangers. But perhaps it shouldn't be totally unsupervised contact.
Yes, absolutely. Again, it's going back to these sort of VR issues that hit the news at the moment. Kind of like, well, you wouldn't just give a 12-year-old a piece of technology where they can interact with whoever the hell you want and you can't see what they're doing. You go, I've got no idea what this is, but here it is. You wanted one for Christmas. Away you go. No. I think the other thing which I reflect upon, because I've seen enough of these videos on YouTube and TikTok, is telling the young person to be mindful about the fact that someone else might be recording what you're saying as well.
Yeah.
Because there are so many TikTok videos about, oh, look at this loser in this game, and someone's recorded someone freaking out or trying to boss people around and things as well. So be mindful of your interactions with others as well. You know, beyond the, just don't get into arguments with people and don't be abusive to people, but be mindful of the fact you could end up on a TikTok video with people mocking you and stuff because of the way you were behaving as well. So yeah, I think, you know, being aware of these issues doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. You should be aware of these issues.
Absolutely. And I sort of thought it'd be good to have a bit of time to think a bit about what the positives associated with gaming are. And you kind of touched on it before with the jobs market. I think the problem solving skills. I do think it's really funny where the difference in, if you're over 18, then you should be doing these little games because it's brain training and it's going to pop Alzheimer's and all of this, because there's a recognition that doing these unusual tasks is good for your brain to stay active. But obviously, if it's children doing it, it's probably all bad.
You're wasting your time. And yeah. Go and kick a football around. Because actually, you've got far more chance of ending up working in the gaming industry than you have making a living from football.
Yeah.
but that's not a message that is often delivered to young people. Yeah, you know, from that perspective, the gaming industry is huge and there are tons of jobs in it. But equally, if you've got a young person who's developing their STEM knowledge and STEM skills because they want to work in the gaming industry, that makes them quite broad and flexible in terms of other science and technology areas they might end up working in as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, I spoke to someone a while ago who's already funded their university fees by developing Roblox skins and selling them.
Wow. That's very cool.
He ended up with some little sort of like virtual international workshop where there were various people around the world that would work with him, and he'd pay them and then he'd resell them on. And yeah, it was very entrepreneurial. And he's already covered his university fees. So, you know.
That's great. I mean... Yeah, that's really, and that's it. Like it's skills that it might not be that the young person wants to go on to work in gaming or in IT generally, but having an understanding of issues that they've learned about through games that do require a bit of an understanding of coding, like Roblox and Minecraft. They're perhaps more able to think critically about some of the things we were talking about last time, of like not just relying on what their mate down the pub said your brain's definitely doing, because they'll be like, well, actually I know a little bit about code, maybe not very much, but enough to know this may not be true.
You know, you've got some great team working stuff in there. You look at groups of young people who are building Minecraft buildings and villages together, and they're scheduling when they're going to do it, and they're communicating with each other, and they're working as part of a team. And then you look at employment demands for the last 30 years, and what's the most important things for new employees? Soft skills like communication and teamwork has been the same thing for 30 odd years.
Yeah.
So there's some really positives come out of it.
I think it's one of those things that young people always blow me away with, the really inventive ways that they'll use technology. And it's not specific to gaming, but a friend of mine was telling me that during lockdown, her youngest daughter, who was sort of 4 or 5 at the time, would FaceTime her friend. They had a group of toys that were pretty much the same. They'd get all of those toys together and then they'd play the same game via FaceTime. That's which amazing. I think the problem solving that's gone into that, of how I want to play with you, I'm not allowed to see you in real life, but we've got all the same toys, so let's get all the same. It's amazing to think that that's something that a child that young would come up with.
If you reflect on, if we had a lockdown even 20 years ago, it would be horrendous because there was so few ways of maintaining communication and being in touch with people that weren't face-to-face, that, as bad as lockdown was a couple of years ago, technology did facilitate lots of positive outcomes from it.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, going back to the issue of VR, we kind of can hear pundits saying like, oh, in another 5 years, everything's going to be VR. It's all going to be about VR. And I look at the majority of the workforce who still struggle to access a Teams call. I'm not sure that it's going to take over as completely as everybody thinks. We've probably got enough time to kind of...
being a bit of an old sod, I've seen those predictions about VR about once every 5 years, the last 20 years. One of the fundamental challenges with it, and Apple are trying to change this by having their transparent headset, is that you're sealing yourself off from the outside world. Yeah. And again, there's tons of TikTok videos of people falling over when they've been doing VR gaming and things. And you do become quite vulnerable. And it is a weird environment to be in. So, you know, it's kind of like, oh, we have to use VR to have meetings when everyone's perfectly comfortable with Teams. Well, not everyone's perfectly comfortable with Teams, but it's far easier to use Teams than. But yeah, it's like, what's this thing? I don't know what it is. Right, let's ban it rather than going, let's understand what it is. And I can remember years ago going into a primary school and they were just starting to do their Key Stage 2 oral presentations as part of the literacy assessment. And I said to one of the teachers, what can they talk about? I said, anything they want, as long as it's not gaming.
Yeah.
So why not gaming? Oh, they're always going on about it. It's like, that's because they're interested in it and they might want to talk about it.
Yeah.
But it was the immediate shutdown that gaming was a waste of time, whereas everything else was good.
Well, and I think the thing that I found goes hand in hand with that often is an over-reliance on age ratings. Like if children are playing an age-restricted game that's too old for them, then that's really worrying. And so people's first kind of port of call is to say you're not allowed to play anything that is age rated older than you are. And then there are, you know, games that aren't age rated very high, but for various reasons could actually be more scary. You know, like Roblox, I think, has got some games in it which can be quite scary.
No, absolutely. And you look at something like FIFA. You can be playing multiplayer on FIFA with people you don't know and they're calling you an effing whatever. That's still quite an unpleasant experience, regardless of whether the age rating's there or not. And, you know, absolutely. I can't remember whether it was you or whether it was somebody else was saying, talking to a young man who disclosed in a primary school they played GTA. You go, oh, OK, I play it with my dad. OK, we paint cars in the garage. So, you know, unpacking what they're doing with it is an important thing as well. But again, it's kind of like, oh, you want this game, do you? Away you go. Not, all right, why is it a Peggy 18 or why is it a Peggy 15 or whatever? And they're only for guidance. There's no, you know, you get these weird, you shouldn't play that, it's illegal. No, it's not. And since when is telling a young person it's illegal meant they're not going to do it as well?
Well, and this, you know, when we come back to that harm reduction message, actually saying it's illegal isn't the harm reduction approach. But talking to young people about what the risks are and why we might be concerned and saying, you know, perhaps if it is an age restricted game and it's the first time that that child has played a game with that age restriction, maybe having some stricter rules to start off with to kind of test the water a bit.
And you can only play it if I'm in the room, or you can only play it with me, as absolutely. Was the case with that young man who was playing with his dad.
And if you're a professional and you're sort of thinking, well, that how does that apply to me? Then it might be saying, like, maybe you need to have a conversation with the parents to make sure that they are aware of the potential risks if there are games you're really worried about. The last thing that I thought would be good to sort of think about is alternatives to gaming. And particularly because I think often as adults we might have a bit of a tendency just to say, you've been on that thing too long, it's time you had a break, or words to that effect. And I think it's really important, if we're going to do that, to make sure that there are alternatives that young people can do, and recognize the needs that gaming is meeting for them. So if they're playing a lot of FIFA, and you're aware that it is causing a lot of frustration, it might be that actually that's the main place that they hang out with their friends. So helping them have some more in-person meetups, and games of five-a-side in the park where they can get covered in bruises rather than just be screaming at their TV.
Yeah, and the parents were on Facebook going, that little shit, they kicked my kid down. And yeah, so that becomes more of a problematic scenario again as well. But yeah, you know, if it's chucking it down with rain and they're tired and they just want to, there was a nice tea song, wasn't there, about sitting down in your big chair playing some games. you know, it's quite an enjoyable experience, but saying get off that, or what am I going to do instead, sit in your room on your own not doing anything.
And there is that thing of, like, if they were sat reading a book, would you have the same issue? Because there's a lot of books that are total trash and aren't doing any good for your brain at all. So just having those kind of value assumptions about different activities maybe thinking about what need is this meeting in this young person, and if I really want to get them to have perhaps a wider variety of activities, not to ban them from gaming altogether, but to kind of get them out a little bit more, just recognizing that that needs a little bit of thought to go in.
Rather than just opening the door and going off you go. You can't do that anymore because of all the paedophiles. No, I'm joking. But there was a map. I think it was, of all the things, it was the Daily Mail that showed three generations, grandparent, parent, and child, and the radius about how far they were allowed to go from their home.
Oh, really?
The grandparent, it was like miles, and the parent, it was about a mile, and the child, it was 50 yards.
Yeah.
And actually, if you look at the data, child abduction is far less of an issue now than it used to be.
Because of the kids not being able
to. Yeah, because they're all inside playing video games the whole time. On that note,
yeah. So we'll be back in a few weeks with some more podcasts. And in the meantime, if you've got any questions, as always, you can get in touch with us and our contact details are in the show notes. Thank you very much. That's it for another episode of the Online Resilience Podcast. If you liked it, please tell someone you know who might also enjoy it. You can share on Facebook, Twitter, or even just pop a link in an email.